365 days before that event goes off, like everything is in place. Like they know it. I don't want to say it's cookie cutter, but it is so dialed in, and it is dialed in for 240 events in 55 countries. I mean, it's just, they've scaled it amazingly well.
Yeah, yeah. Ooh. I want to welcome you. Everybody, I want to welcome you. Aloha, everybody, to the Mile High Endurance Podcast.
Welcome to episode 229 of the 303 Endurance Podcast. You're listening to your weekly connection to coaches, experts, and top athletes to help you reach your endurance goals. We're your hosts, Coach Rich Soares and 303 Chief Bill Plock. Thanks for joining us for another week of endurance interviews and discussion. Today's show is supported by Generation UCAN and iCor Labs. UCAN to fuel you to the finish line and iCor to help you out recover the competition. Bill, how you doing today, buddy?
I'm great. Looking forward to a bike ride tomorrow. If it doesn't rain, it's supposed to rain today, I guess. So.
Yeah.
So how about you? How are you doing?
I'm doing good. It's it's Aloha Friday. I just love that jingle coming into this show. Last weekend got out for rides both days, got up for some runs. I've been trying to, keep on it every single day. So
I've ridden every single day in April, but one when I was up in the mountains, I forgot my dang shoes. I brought my bike up there actually.
Oh, no.
And I forgot my shoes. So I went one session with tennis shoes on with my look pedals. That didn't go so well. And then I just didn't do it. But that's okay.
I got snowed on high grade last weekend.
Really?
Yeah. Snowing at the top.
Huh.
Yeah.
Is there a lot of people out there?
There were not that many people out there. It wasn't the greatest day to start with. Maybe 20, 30 cars at the bottom when we left. When I got back, there were three. One of them belonged to a buddy I was riding with. Actually, it was Matt. And the other one belonged to somebody else who was just pulling away. So we were the last two to leave.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, that's cool.
Yeah, it was all right.
I will say I've been teaching this virtual spin class, for the last 5 weeks or so. And, I used to teach all the time, and I stopped last winter, I guess, last spring. And so I feel like I could start to feel my fitness not be as good because that one really intense workout every week was pretty helpful, right? And so it's been interesting. I been riding outside mostly, but I did get on my trainer the other day, and I have actually seen, by proof, an increase in my watts. Fairly decent, because I have been cycling more, but I think that extra intensity once a week is making a pretty good difference, and I'm starting to feel like I'm getting a little bit back into shape, which is kind of nice.
That's great.
But it's kind of cool. It's interesting to... So everybody out there, make sure you do at least one intense workout a week. I think that's just key.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. That kind of... 1 in 5 rule, 1 out of 5 workouts should be, really good, hard intensity, kind of giving you that 80-20, 80% easy, 20% hard guideline.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you're outside, I typically, except if you have a hill to really challenge you, it's hard to work out super hard, I think.
Yeah.
Unless you're on a closed course and,
hills. Hills are key.
Yeah. And I did a great gravel ride. We can talk about that on the other side. It was really fun.
Awesome. All right, folks, your journey today is going to take you on a trip down Ironman Lane with Matt Miller of Base Performance. Matt has been in triathlon very early in the sport's history. And today he even trains with some of the pros and boulders you're going to hear. He's guided several visually impaired athletes to Ironman finishes. He's modeled for Ironman Cologne. And as the owner of Base Performance, is going to give us a real transparent look at how COVID-19 is impacting the sports nutrition business. Also in today's show, we've got what's new in the 303. We've got a little news out of Colorado. We've got endurance news in general. We've got a video of the week. And I've got just a little announcement here. The new 303 podcast. Like if you're like looking for the podcast on your podcast app, the 303 Endurance podcast is now officially alive. It finally got approved through iTunes this week. Just a little bit of elbow grease on my part to get that done, but it is done. What we really want you to do is we want you to start subscribing to 303 Endurance. We're not gonna turn off the publication of Mile High, the Mile High Endurance stream, if you will. But we do want to try to encourage people to start getting over there and subscribing to 303 so that we can eventually do that someday. We can formally make the switch and not publish on Mile High Endurance anymore. So that's what we've got coming up. We know that you're not racing yet. This is a great time to try a new sports nutrition product in your training, something that's completely different than other high glycemic, super sugary products. Try UCAN. It is a superstarch. It's a food. It gives you nice steady energy throughout the day. It's really kind of a nice slow release, steady energy that keeps you feeling great. Try it out. Use the code MHE2020 to save 15% off of any product at GenerationUCAN.com or try the UCAN Tri Starter Pack. I think it's still active, 50% off. You can only use it once. GenerationUCAN.com. And then there's a link here for the UCAN Tri Starter Pack 50 off. And hope you enjoy it. I'm actually sipping on it right now.
Do they have coffee? Do they make coffee?
They have a coffee bar, actually.
Wow. Okay.
This is my coffee bar. It's a coffee energy. Anytime bar. I've got it right here in case of an emergency. I was in back-to-back meetings yesterday, and I couldn't get off, and I decided I'm going to keep a stock down here right by the desk in case of emergency.
Gotcha.
Well, shall we get into this interview with Matt Miller?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's get over there. Here we go. Here's Matt Miller. All right, as you heard in our lead-up, we've got Matt Miller of Base Performance with us today. He has a rich history with triathlon and Ironman in particular. We're going to get into all of that. Welcome, Matt. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, good morning, guys. Nothing like being cooped up and doing a little podcast during quarantine time, right?
We love that. That is our bit.
Yeah.
When we have new guests, we've got this little game that we like to do. I can't wait to do this with you. It's called Two Truths and a Lie. And what we do is we ask our guest for three statements about themselves, two of which are truths, one of which is a lie. And you don't tell us which is which. We're going to try to guess. And I have a funny feeling with you, this is going to be pretty fun. So whenever you're ready, Bill and I are, you just tell us these three statements about yourself.
All right. Well, so let's get going through the interview a little bit and the talk, and then I can think about some things in my past, and we'll kind of go from there.
Oh, you want to hold off? Maybe, okay, all right.
Yeah, let's put it right in the middle or something. Maybe in a few minutes.
That's fine.
Never done that before, but that's going to be fun. I like that. All right. Well, Bill, why don't you get us going?
Yeah, so Matt, you and I know each other for a few years here, and I had the pleasure of spending time with you in Florida right before all the travel kind of went to a screeching halt at your base camp, and I was really impressed by that in general with the 120-some athletes from around the country that came to participate, and you're building your company base, but we can talk about that in a little bit. I just want to get to know you a little bit better and maybe talk about where you grew up, what some of your favorite sports were as kids, maybe who a sports hero was, and some of your swimming background, which I think is what really got you into this whole thing. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so I grew up in a town outside of Nashville, Tennessee, called Hendersonville. And I am the second coolest person to come out of my high school. Most people would say Taylor Swift is a little bit cooler than I am. But she did go to my high school a few years after me, or quite a few years after me. But so that's where I'm from, is Hendersonville. And it is this town 30 minutes outside of Nashville. My family moved there in, 1979, 74 or something like that. Tiny little town. And then Barbara Mandrell moved there. You've seen, if you watched Walk the Line about Johnny Cash, that's where his house was. Clint Black had a house there. Reba McEntire had houses there. Everybody that was in country music lived in Hendersonville, Tennessee. And so the singing competitions, the talent shows, that's what it was. The talent shows when you're growing up are just amazing with people singing and stuff like that. But I was, that wasn't for me. I was more into the sports. I played soccer. I was a swimmer. And when I was about 12 years old is when I kind of took it up a notch in the swimming. And that's when you start swimming 6 days a week. And in the summertime, Monday through Friday, you swim from 6:30 to 8:30 in the morning and then 4 to 6 at night. And, we'd crank out about 15,000 meters a day, 6 days a week. And it was just normal. And now a heavy week of swimming is 15,000 for the entire week, and I'm pretty wrecked. But yeah, grew up swimming, went to college in Virginia, just down the road from where the Virginia 70.3 will now be held in 2021. Went to James Madison University, swam all 4 years there. I specialized in 200 butterfly, 400 IM, and kept on swimming. Just never stopped. And what's crazy is growing up in Nashville, the first triathlon I did was 1988. It was the Maryland Farms Sprint Triathlon. I was 12 years old. We did cross training. We ran, we rode our bikes. And so our coach had us register for triathlons for fun. And so ever since 1988, I have always completed at least one triathlon. And I got to tell you, I would never in my life have said 2020 would be the year that I don't complete a triathlon. But I'm not having good faith right now. But I've done one every single year for 32 years. And by golly, if that's the worst thing that happens to me this year, I'm going to be pretty upset. But yeah, long 32 years of racing triathlons. Same as every other kid, it was probably 1987. I was watching the Hawaii Ironman. I was 12 years old. So when I would go race these Iron Kids races, we weren't allowed to have aero bars. And so we would rest our elbows on the handlebars of our road bikes and pretend like we were racing. And man, it was awesome. I loved watching Dave Scott and Mark Allen. And up here in Boulder, I swim in some of Dave's swim workouts. And so it's great to, some of the people I looked up to when I was a kid, to be able to train with them up in Boulder. It's pretty awesome. That was my upbringing. Always been a swimmer, always been a triathlete. And just, man, I just love the sport. I love being healthy.
This was one of the things I didn't really know about you. Bill was sharing with me beforehand that, you sometimes share a lane with people like Tio.
Yeah. So I swim at Rally. I'm a pretty good swimmer. 2004, I was going for Olympic trials. Just barely missed it in the 200 fly. And so I can motor. But believe it or not, freestyle is my worst of the four strokes. But yeah, when we swim in Rally, I swim with Julie Dibbins' squad, which is, it's Tio, it's Rennie, it's Justin Metzler. Last year, Tim Don was there, Didi Griesbauer. So it's a pretty good squad. I'm the only non-professional triathlete that it trains with them, that swims with them. We got a couple others now, Alex Gerber. But yeah, we move. And what's interesting is the paces that we're doing our main sets at, which people are just barely hanging on. I mean, we're hauling. What's crazy is that's like the times that we would do our warm-ups at when I was like 16 years old. It's just it's an incredibly different type of swimming that we do nowadays. And when people don't realize what, growing up a swimmer and how fast we're actually going and stuff like that, it was, it's pretty amazing. But yeah, I get to swim with some pretty cool cats up here in Boulder.
Is it hard to keep up sometimes, or not? Or?
It's going to be hard to keep up in about 2 months when I get back in the pool. I feel like I'm snuffleupagus right now. I haven't done anything. I mean, I'm 43, and so if I'm trying to swim with, let's say, Justin Betzler, who's like 26, it's a little tough. I don't recover as fast as I used to. I can easily hang on for the 50s, the 100s, maybe even up to the 200s. But once it starts getting past that, I start falling apart. And, as Bill, you know, and most people know, I've now got a 14-month-old, and my wife is 5 months pregnant. And that just, it's really thrown a wrench in my training over the last 2 years. I wouldn't trade it for anything. But with the growth of base performance, the growth of my 14-month-old son, my belly is kind of growing at the same rate as my wife's pregnant belly. But I love it. My training has gone downhill, but everything else is just really amazing. So it's been a fun couple years, that's for sure.
Well, let's talk about, you know, you've done a lot of things with the visually impaired world as well. How did you get into that, and talk about some of the history of that, and particularly Charlie, who you've guided mostly or a lot anyway? And I know last year you put two Ironmans back to back with that, and just give us some background on that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was racing. I lived in Los Angeles in 2000, and we were racing every single weekend. Me and all my buddies, we lived, breathed, ate, swimming. And we'd go down, we'd race all this stuff in San Diego, and Chris McCormick was racing, and Craig Alexander was like this new up-and-coming triathlete. And we were all sleeping on couches and trying to keep our head above water and trying to get sponsorships and all that. And so I read this article one day from Bob Babbitt from Challenged Athletes Foundation, and he talked about his good buddy, who was blind, that Bob would lead through the Challenge Athletes Foundation charity triathlon. And he would talk about leading him on the tandem and how amazing it was. And then he joked about how this guy would, I think his name was Tom, would say, hey, I'll take you down in a game of golf any day of the week as long as tee off is at midnight. You know, he never let his blindness get in the way of him. And I was really fascinated by it. So I reached out to Bob in 2003 and I said, hey, do you happen to know of any triathletes? Not 2003, I'm sorry, 2001. And do you know any triathletes that are blind? I would love to lead one and guide one through a triathlon. And he said, well, we know one lady who lives in Chicago. And she does some 5Ks and she does some swims. You know, why don't you reach out to her and her family? Their name was Heidi Musser. So I reached out and we set a date that we would do the Malibu Sprint Triathlon, like on Sunday, September 16th of 2001. And let's say that we all know what happened on Tuesday, September 11th, 2001. All the planes were grounded, everything. And so we were, oh, we're going to be able to do this. So the race got pushed back 2 weeks. We did it. It was, we did it on like this mountain bike beach cruiser tandem. We had no clue what we were doing. The waves were breaking like 12 feet overhead. It was insane. And I had this little blind lady, you know, named Heidi, who was probably 36 years old and 4'10" and 90 pounds soaking wet. Took her out there and we did it. It was fantastic. So then we went back down to San Diego and we did the 1.2-mile swim of the CAF Challenge. And, man, it was amazing. And then next thing you know, Dave Scott's bike sponsor, Griffin Bikes, reached out to me and wanted to sponsor me and build me tandems and give me bikes and have me be one of their athletes. And I thought this was the coolest thing in the world. Paula Newby-Fraser was sponsored by these guys. Dave Scott, like, this was the coolest bike in the world. So all of a sudden I had a bike sponsor because he was compelled by what I was doing. And so Heidi and I kept racing. And then we went to Wildflower. Then we went to Alcatraz. And when we were at Alcatraz, we were the CBS story. and you know, believe it or not, a sports supplements company called Pinnacle reached out to me and asked if I would work with them, and so they sponsored us for Escape from Alcatraz, and then I started doing more programs with them, and I helped them sponsor some professional triathletes. We worked with Matt Dixon, was one of my buddies when he was racing, and we formed a pro team in Los Angeles, and Pinnacle sponsored it, and then we sponsored Malibu Triathlon, all these races, and we just really started to grow. And in 2003, another athlete from Boulder, Amelia Dickerson, reached out to us, said, "Hey, can I race with you guys?" So now we had two. And then in June of 2003, Dave Biggany reached out and said, "Hey, I've been reading on these, you know, online, like MySpace, about what you're doing. Can I join your group? I'm blind. I live in Tallahassee." I said, "Yeah." And then he said, "I've got this buddy named Aaron Scheides, who's like 19 and lives in Michigan, and he's losing his sight. Can he join us?" I said, "Yeah." And all of a sudden I had four athletes in that wanted to race triathlons. And so then we all went to Malibu Triathlon. Keith Simmons, he owned a company called Ironman Wetsuits. And then he started a new wetsuit company called Xterra Wetsuits. Calls me on the phone. He was a friend of mine. He says, "Hey, man, I got this new wetsuit company coming out called Xterra Wetsuits. My niece, she's blind. She lives in Richmond, Virginia. If she can come race with your company, I'll give you, I'll give all your guides and all the athletes my new Xterra wetsuits. I just need you to take a couple pictures and post them on your MySpace page so that people could see the pictures." You know, it was before Facebook.
MySpace.
MySpace. And so that's what we did. And so we had five athletes and five guides race Malibu Triathlon. And it was just awesome. And then they said, "You know, we want to race an Ironman." And we're like, "Wow, okay." So we tried to get him into Ironman Florida. We tried all these different things and couldn't get it. And in 2004, Malibu Triathlon again. So Ironman actually reached out to me and said, "Hey, we know this gentleman in Florida who he's doing some triathlons. He's reached out. He wants to do, you know," back then it was called the Disney Half Ironman. There was no 70.3. It was the Disney Half Ironman. And he would like to, he would do it. And we thought maybe you could help him out. So I reached out to him. His name was Charlie at the time. He was probably late 50s. And, so we brought him out to Malibu, and that year we had 10 blind athletes and 10 guides, and we decided to film a documentary called Victory Over Darkness as we trained and led five blind athletes to race the first Ironman, their first Ironman. And we started to just kind of grow and build into it. And so then at the time, the owners, you know, Ironman was a private family-owned business. It was a licensing company. They owned Kona and no other races. All the other races were licensed races by a guy named Graham Frazier, who lived right here in Boulder. And his company was called Ironman North America, but it wasn't, you know, what we see now. And the people who owned the Ironman brand, it was a family of eye doctors from the St. Luke's Eye Institute, Pitt Gills, and his dad, and they were eye doctors. And so when they found out in 2005 what I was doing, they invited me to their to come visit with them in Clearwater, Florida. So I went to Clearwater, Florida, and I sat down with them, and I sat in Pitt's living room. I told him everything that we're doing, and I told him my history. And he's like, "You know," he's like, "I've got this idea. Can I run it by you?" And I said, "Yeah." So we started talking about it. He says, "What's your favorite race out there?" And I said, "Honestly, it's Wildflower Half Ironman." He's like, "Yeah, that's just like the best." So he's like, "I want to create a series, and I want to call it the 70.3 series." And he's like, "How does that sound?" I'm like, "Wow, that sounds really cool." So we started talking about it, and, you know, started to, you know, we brainstormed on it for a while, and let's put a world championships right here in Clearwater. And so we're having this conversation in his living room in April of 2005, developing the 70.3 series, which look at where it is today. You know, ultimately, like 2 years later, they sold to Providence Equity and then Competitor Group and then Wanda and now Advance. And so, yeah, my long history with Iron Man has gone on a lot deeper than most people realize. But yeah, and then it just working with the blind athletes, just it led to so many, you know, it led to my relationship with Iron Man. The company Pinnacle that was like sponsoring me and stuff like that. Ultimately, one of the partners died, and the company folded. So then, when Base started coming around in 2013, I reached out to the other owner of Pinnacle. His name is Steve Stern, and said, "Hey, I want to do this with Base Performance. You know, I worked with you in 2003, 2004, and 2005, and we got into sponsoring all the triathlons. We were just a little ahead of our time, and so brought Steve on as a partner of Base Performance. And so I, you know, to me, you know, my history and my lifeblood is working with the blind athletes and working with what we call physically challenged athletes. You know, I was there pushing to get the triathlon into the Paralympics. Like, that's just what I do. It's in my blood. And that's what I love is just, you know, racing with these athletes. And then, you know, last year we raced with Charlie, took Charlie through Ironman Chattanooga in October or September of 2019. He was 77 years old.
Wow.
And he raced Ironman Chattanooga, and we're supposed to race Ironman Maryland this year. That's slated. I was supposed to guide a guy named Scott Woolsey at Ironman St. George in May. And then I was going to guide Charlie at Ironman Maryland in September. But now St. George is the same day as Maryland. So I told Scott I can't guide him, but I did tell Charlie. I'm like, look, I you know, if it goes on, we'll race it. If it doesn't go on, we won't. But I'll never stop guiding blind athletes. It's one of my favorite things to do for sure.
Matt, when we were in Kona, it was either last year or the year before, I remember just hanging out in the expo area. And at the time you were talking about trying to get a visually impaired championship set up through Ironman, you know, what's been your experience in trying to get that kind of thing established?
So it's, yeah, and that's a great thing. And what we were talking about doing, and Dave Christensen, who is one of the greatest race directors over in the Ironman, you know, establishment, was full on. Let's do it. Let's put together, you know, a 70.3 championships, for the blind athletes. But it will happen. We are going to try to, you know, it's, I'm just saying, I'm going to keep working on it. But the difficult thing is, with the Olympics, well, going to be in 2020, the athletes that were, let's say, blind and visually impaired were so focused on that and training for that, which it very well should be. And it will, this would be the first Olympic Games where both male and female visually impaired athletes get to compete. And there's been a lot of buildup to it. So I didn't want to take any of that away from the athletes and their focus and stuff. So it's something that we'll try to come back around to. But I have had conversations with some of the people in the at Ironman at the upper level about trying to put something like this on. But man, they've got a lot of moving parts. And you know, I actually sent Andrew Mesick a letter last week and said, "You're doing a great job," because I could not imagine sitting in the position of having to cancel or postpone 100 global events so far in a matter of 8 weeks. You just, the numbers are mind blowing, what they're having to do right now on a global scale compared to everyone else. So lots going on.
What do you see on that note? Where do you see things? What do you think about Kona happening at this point? What's your guess?
You know, I think it's going to be very, very difficult. You know, just in, let's say, North America, there's supposed to be 12 qualifying races. When you add the two Canada races, plus the 10 U.S. races, you know, and then the 13th full is Kona. Well, we don't have that many. I mean, we've had Wisconsin as a qualifier, Louisville, Florida, and Arizona. Maybe Chattanooga, right? Chattanooga. So I think we've only had five races out of 12, and to qualify for Kona. And so because St. George is postponed for a year, Texas is postponed until after Kona. I mean, it's going to be very difficult. So like I said, I would not want to be in the Tampa offices right now working on like putting all this together, because, you know, I'll always be supportive of them, but a lot of athletes will be negative towards them and, oh, they're not making the right decisions, or, oh my God, they should give me a refund. Like they, oh man, I can't bear to listen to some of the stuff. Like they have to make a decision that is, they can't, you know, when I read about it on Pathetic Triathletes group or some of the groups, I told them I have such and such instance, I deserve a refund. Well, if they give Johnny a refund, then they got to give, you know, Billy a refund because they gave Johnny a refund. And they, you know, if you take 100 races globally, that's what they've had to cancel or postpone, 100 races. If the average entry fee, the average entry fee is $500. And I'm saying this because you've got some of them are 70.3s and some of them are 140.6. And then you, 2000 people per race. Now some races will have 3000, some will have 1000. So I'm using round numbers. You know, we're talking about a 200 and, you know, or that number right there is $100 million in entry fees. And so if they said, hey, we'll give you the option to, refund you, I can guarantee you 99% of the registered participants would elect the refund. And could you imagine having $100 million refunded from your bank account within a matter of a few weeks? It's just not feasibly possible. It's not feasibly possible for Ironman. It's not feasibly possible for Lance from Without Limits, for Rev 3, for none of these races. It's too big. The companies would completely go under. And so I talk about this a lot. Bill, I watched your interview with Lance, and I'm in total agreement. It's not something that is sustainable. You can't, if you offer one person a refund, you open up the floodgates, and the next thing you know, 3 months later, you're out of business. That happened to me in Denver in 2012. But yeah, crazy times that we're dealing with right now.
So it sounds like you think that, you know, the qualification races that are required for Kona just won't be there, which makes the championship hard to pull off. But what's your prediction for when you think that racing will resume? And do you think it'll be triathlons that start first? Do you think it'll be cycling races, running races? What's your prediction?
Well, what's interesting is, and that's a great question, is I had this exact conversation with Eric Opdyke just last week, who owns the Rev 3 Triathlon Series. And I've had the same type of conversation with Lance from Without Limits. So if you recall, when the shutdown or the slowdown was occurring, it was no mass gatherings of, you know, such and such, no mass gatherings of 250 people or more. Oh, now it's no mass gatherings of 50 people or more, 10 people or more. And then it was stay at home. And it was a rapid decline. But I think, you know, I have friends that work in the medical field, and I think there's just too many unknowns. So let's say that the states or people start to open this back up. Are they going to all of a sudden say, yeah, go ahead, bring 50,000 people in and let's take that risk? I mean, if I was on the state legislature or the city legislature, I wouldn't personally. If Ironman Boulder was still to around Boulder and I was to say, okay, let's look at in August, are we gonna have Ironman Boulder go on in August? Well, hey, Ironman, can you tell me how many of your participants that are registered are coming from the, let's say, New York City area? And they're like, well, 5%. Well, no, I'm sorry. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. And I think there's too many unknowns. You know, I want to say Ironman Copenhagen or Denmark, which is like August 16th, that was just postponed or canceled. I can't remember. I think it's too much of an unknown for 2020. I actually have a conversation with Ironman at 10:30 today with about this very topic because we have to plan. So I don't know. I know that they opened up the legacy to try to get a lot more athletes to come in. You know, me personally, if Kona goes on this year, I'm not going. I'm just not. And I'm not sending my staff. I'm not going to put my staff in jeopardy, and I'm definitely not going to put myself or, you know, my newborn son or my wife who will have been, you know, gave birth 2 months before on an island in the Pacific with 100,000 tourist travelers from all across the world. I'm not putting myself in that situation, and I'm not going to put my staff in that situation because it's too congested. It's too condensed. And there's too many unknowns from other countries. And they, you know, we've all been to Kona. The athletes and the spectators come from every single country worldwide. And I don't think that come by October 10th-ish, we're going to be in a position fighting this pandemic that I don't want to be on an island in the Pacific 6,000 miles from home, or, and I'm not going to put my staff out there.
Or a plane for 7 hours, 7.5 hours.
Yeah,
right.
Yep, not a chance. I've already told them, you know. I haven't actually told my staff yet, so I'll have to tell them before we air this podcast. They'll be like, wait. But yeah, we're not going this year, and I'm gonna tell Ironman. Like, I'm not gonna put the employees of my company in that type of petri dish. I'm not going to book flights, and I'm not going to reserve Airbnbs and houses and all the expenses that go along with it. Because for us to activate at Ironman with our staff, it's about $10,000 before you even get on the island, not including what it costs to, you know, to pay Ironman to have a tent there. So, you know, you're all in with everything and food and air. We're about $25,000 of our to activate. And I'm not in a position that if all of a sudden a week out, like, hey, we're not gonna, we can't have it, or something's gone on. Like, I'm calling it this early. Just, hey, we're not going to go. I wish everybody else good luck, but it's just not going to be for us this year.
Well, so. It's interesting that, you know, a few months ago, you already kind of started to shift a little bit when you hired Kira to come in and take a harder look at being harder participation in local triathlons without limits and probably other ones. And maybe that's a very fortuitous thing, because I think that people like Lance and other local triathlons around the country are going to be in a great position to have a smaller venue of 200 people or 300 people and come up with new ways to do transitions that will meet local standards of safety that we're going to ease back into. I don't see the big events happening very fast. What do you think about that?
I 100% agree with you. And that's exactly what I told Lance. And that's what I told Eric from Rev3. As I said, as long as you can keep your registrations around 250 or 300, you can be nimble. You can pivot very quickly and you can adjust a lot of things. What Ironman, and I love Ironman, what they're so good at is 2,000 athletes on a set course, and everything is... because I get to work behind the scenes. 365 days before that event goes off, like, everything is in place. Like, they know it. I don't want to say it's cookie cutter, but it is so dialed in, and it is dialed in for 240 events in 55 countries. I mean, it's just, they've scaled it amazingly well. So the hard part is you can't all of a sudden say, you know, so let's say it costs the Ironman organization $1 million to put on an event. I'm just pulling a random, easy mathematical number out. They can't. It's not financially viable for them to go to Boulder 70.3 and say, well, we know we've got 2,000 people that want to race, but, you know, Boulder says we can only have 250 people at the res, so we're limiting entries to 250. Well, it's just not viable. It's more financially viable for them to just cancel the race and defer it or postpone it as opposed to putting it on at 250. But for someone, you know, a local sprint or something like that, it's a different story. Ironman goes into Boulder, city of Boulder, and says, you know, well, we're anticipating, we have this many people traveling in, so this many people will be in your hotels, and this many people will spend X amount of dollars at your restaurants and car rentals and all the different things, which is fantastic. It's fantastic every other year, except for this year, because this year, the city of Boulder does, you know, I looked at the numbers last night. Boulder County, we have 326,000 people in our Boulder County, but we only have 207 confirmed coronavirus cases and only 3 deaths. So we are at 0.006% of the population has contracted the virus. We've done a very good job with our stay at home. Now, are we all of a sudden going to invite, I don't know, 1,500 people from all around the U.S. and all around the world to come to Boulder and be breathing heavy and in transitions next to each other and swimming in packs and running and all that stuff? Or is the city of Boulder going to just say, nah, we don't want that. We love it every other year, but we don't want it this year. We're not going to, you know, it only takes one, you know, one infected person out of 2,000 to be in that transition. And pretty quick, a lot of people can get sick. And I don't see the city within the next few months saying, hey, let's take that chance this year. I don't think the reward is greater than the risk for a lot of these cities around the country. Now, maybe let's use Ironman Florida as an example. It's Panama City Beach. And if you've ever been to Ironman Florida, November 1st, the city, it's kind of like a ghost town. There's very few locals there. And when you're there, pretty much the only people that are there are the Ironman athletes. So maybe a city like Panama City says, well, since none of our population is here, 95% of our population is in, you know, different locations, and you know, maybe, but for most places, Lake Placid, I don't see how Governor Cuomo is going to say, yeah, come on,
right,
just flattened the curve. Let's go ahead and bring in 3,000 athletes and family members and friends from all around the world and have them fly into our airports and fly in. No way. I just don't see that happening. I don't see that happening in Chattanooga. I don't see it happening in a lot of places. So it's going to be an interesting year how this unfolds. That's for sure. And with regards to Kona, I don't know. I love racing Ironman. I love being a business partner of Ironman. This is going to take a big hit on them, a big, big hit. I want to see them be able to weather through this. And Kona is their bread and butter, but I imagine Andrew Messick and some of the upper level people are losing a little bit of sleep over this each night, because, man, there's got to be some tough decisions that are going to be made, and they're going to upset some athletes, and they're going to piss off some athletes, and they're going to piss off some communities. But at the end of the day, you got to do what's right for your business, what's right for your family, and what's right for your athletes and things like that. So it's, man, it's a tough year.
Oh. How about for you guys at base? What are you doing?
It's horrible.
I mean, obviously you're very tied to it, but what are you doing different, or how are you going to weather this? I have my own issues with 303, right? I mean, we're all tied together and figuring out how.
So typically every year, man, it's like clockwork. March 10th, it's like the floodgates open. Your hair is on fire until Thanksgiving. and people are training and they're communicating and they're buying product and you can't keep up with inventory and you're always packing to head to an event where you're selling more product and cash flow is great and you're just like, life is good. And it just, man, it always starts like that Saturday right around March 10th, and it hasn't started. It hasn't. I mean, so like yesterday we did $175 in revenue on the website when I was like, oh boy. some Mondays are our big ordering days for some reason. That's when people order. Mondays of April last year, we're doing like $10,000 or $15,000 in revenue on the day. And I think Monday of this week we did $68. Like, it's just, and hey, I'm in the same boat. I went to Laura Lee and I said, hey, you got to stop buying all these things online. Like, we're hoarding our money because the unknown of stuff that's going on out there. So it's tough. It's tough on us. We've applied for, the paycheck forgiveness and all the loans and things like that, but it's hard. But I get it. And so at some point you want to market and advertise and, hey, we're here for you. But on the other hand, you don't want to be like, that place that you gave your email address to 15 years ago, that's now emailing you like, I don't want to be that guy.
Right.
So it's that thin line that you got to walk on and navigate. And man, I just want to go back to where we were like 8 weeks ago when we were at camp and we were running around with our friends and swimming and having fun and going to races. Like I think that's what we miss the most. I miss the friendships. I miss being able to go for bike rides with my friends. I miss being able to, to go to Ironman Chattanooga or Ironman Texas and rent a big house with a bunch of my friends and do team dinners and give everybody bear hugs at the expos. Like, all that's going to change. And that's what I miss. I miss my friends. And that's what triathlon and Ironman racing and traveling has done for me and my team is we've got friends from all around the country and all around the world who fly in and we get to connect at the races. And that's why we go. And that's the hard part. You can try to do all these little Zoom happy hours and this and this, but it's just not the same. So that's what I really miss.
I was telling Bill the other day that I think I'm going to miss even just chatting with friends in the porta potty line.
Absolutely. the crappy little jokes you talk about when you're in a crappy situation of the porta potties, that type of stuff. But yeah. Oh man, it's just, I don't know. And it just affects everyone. My wife is 5 months pregnant. You know what it's like to go to for us to try to get into the doctor's office right now? It's terrible. You walk in and you feel like you're on planet Mars or something. The doctors and nurses, even if the OBGYN, it's like DEFCON 20, with all the face masks, and you're like, oh my gosh, this is so hard. And and they're talking about how, well, if you have your baby next week, the husband might not even be able to be there. Like, that would just be terrible. And I just, it's affecting everybody. And so every morning I wake up, I grab my son it's tough. It's tough for everybody. I just want this thing, to run its course and affect the least amount of people as possible. And let's get past it and get back to, letting people live their life again. But I think this is going to change us in a way that we're going to realize forever.
I'm going to shift gears a little bit and kind of bring us back, kind of lighten the mood here a little bit. You ready to do the two truths and a lie?
Yeah.
Well, let's do it. Let's do a little two truths and a lie commercial break here. All right. So
okay.
Whenever you're ready and, just lay it on us.
Let's see.
Three statements.
Man, boy, I don't know. I'd say my favorite meal to have at dinner is chocolate chip cookies. Gosh, I should have really been a little prepared for this. Growing up, one of my idols of all time sports would be, Michael Jordan. And maybe another one is my son is 14 months old and he's been on a plane 44 times. How about that?
I'm going to say the non-truth is Michael Jordan.
I'm going to go with the non-truth are cookies for dinner and Michael Jordan and the and your son being 18 years old. And how many plane trips? I'm going to say whatever it was. That number is accurate.
Yeah. So my son is 14 months old. And yeah, he's been on a plane 44 times.
Wow.
Believe it or not. Yeah. Yes. And 2 nights ago, Laura Lee and I baked a dozen cookies for dinner.
Did you really? Awesome.
I'm like, hey, what do you want to have for dinner? She's like, cookies. So we had chocolate chip cookies and Ben and Jerry's ice cream. It was fantastic. And yeah, I don't know why I thought of Michael Jordan. I was looking at the question as who one of your idols growing up. My idol growing up was Dave Scott.
Yeah, and, that makes sense.
Yeah, and Michael Jordan. I never got into basketball, but I know, man, all my friends growing up, they had the Air Jordans and they loved Michael Jordan and this and this. And I used to walk around every single day of school. I had this shirt that said like swim bike dig or something, and it was an Escape from Alcatraz triathlon shirt, because that was the other one that used to be on like CBS on Sunday mornings. And I would find these triathlon race shirts. Like I had one that was like, and I'm like 12 years old, but I had an Escape from Alcatraz triathlon shirt, and I had like a Bud Light Ironman Hawaii t-shirt, and I used to wear these things when I was like 12 years old while everyone else is walking around like pretending like they're a basketball, like they're Air Jordan or Bo Jackson was the other one, and I'm walking around like I used to wear these really short fluorescent pink running shorts because that's what the guys used to race in, and that's what I would wear. And I would, when I was racing triathlons, I'd cut my t-shirt like just below my nipples. And yeah, that was my outfit that I used to walk all around right in, because that's what the guys like Mark Allen and Dave Scott used to wear. So, yeah.
So my other kind of favorite conversation with you, it was at dinner last year in Kona, and we were talking about, speaking of t-shirts just below the nipples, you used to do modeling for Iron Man cologne. I didn't even rewrite at the time. So you got to tell us that story.
Yeah. So again, you know, this goes back to the Gills family. And so 2007, I led Charlie through Kona. And, you know, Iron Man was still a privately held company. It wasn't, it was still owned by the family at this point. And, there was a gentleman named Bill as well, and I swear his name is so similar to yours, Bill Plock. and he handled licensing, and Avon, the Avon ladies, did a partnership arrangement with Iron Man to license the Iron Man cologne, and they needed a representative triathlete to do all the ads, do all the packaging and all that type of stuff. But this person would also have to travel all around the world, Chile, Ecuador, Argentina, Brazil, all across the US, Europe, and speak at Avon conventions and educate the ladies on how to be a triathlete and how to you know, and if you've ever seen the Avon people, it's they're not really into triathlon. And so Ironman put it out there. They spoke to Maka, they spoke to Crow, they spoke to a bunch of people, they spoke to me because I had just raced Kona with Charlie. And if you ever go back and you're riding the trainer one day, just go on YouTube and put in the 2007 Ironman World Championships, and you'll see that Charlie and I were one of the featured stories for the NBC show. And they said, so let's talk to Matt. So I flew out to New York and I did all of the talks and the interviews, and they said, you'd be great. And so for 6 years, from 2008 through 2014, I basically, I had other, I had a full-time job as well. I owned a construction company, but I would travel all around the world and all these different countries and speak at Avon conventions and trade shows. And there'd be like 5,000 Avon people in a conference room, and I would have a slideshow and I would talk about, you know, how to incorporate sales and how, you know, can you help motivate, you know, buyers and sellers into purchasing the Ironman cologne. And we became, within Avon, we were the number one selling cologne, and we were actually the number two highest selling fragrance in the world. The one that beat us was Fergie Ferg. I don't know why, how or why, but it was huge globally. And I, you know, my friends used to make fun of me, "Wow, you're huge in Japan," or "You're huge in Peru." I was like, "Yeah, well, it was like I would get off the plane and you're driving down the highway and there's billboards of me." It was so weird, but cool. Yeah, and that's what I did. And then and that licensing agreement with Avon was the largest one at Ironman. I mean, they've got Ironman watches, you know, Ironman mattresses, everything. But this one was huge. And it was great. You know, again, it's part of my years of history. This is before Andrew Messick even became CEO, and before, you know, there was literally one employee from back then, I think, is still with the company today, Joanna Jordan. Actually, Shane Facto, the COO, he's still there. But other than that, yeah, it was a wild ride. It was awesome. And then Avon just, you know, I don't know, got into some financial difficulties and filed, I think, Chapter 11. And this was one of the programs that they kind of dropped. So it stopped. But yeah, I traveled the world as the face of Ironman for 6 years.
That's funny. You still have a bottle of it somewhere?
I got tons of it.
Yeah, we need a maybe that becomes your profile picture for the day or something, right?
Hey, when you release this,
oh, it's,
I will. I'll put this as my profile picture.
All right,
we need that for the show. We're going to need that for promoting the show. Awesome.
All right. Yeah. Yeah, my history with Ironman, it's got a lot of different branches hanging from that tree right there. So,
well, we got to wrap up in a second, but I am curious, one question more on a business standpoint. What do you think about this purchase of Ironman? And the timing was unbelievable, in my opinion. I'm not criticizing. It's just interesting with all the cancellations. And do you know much about the organization that bought them? And what do you see the effect of that?
You know, I see, I don't know. I know very little about it. Everything was very hush hush. Rightfully so, once they become a publicly traded company, I mean, they couldn't talk about anything. I do know that, you know, Advance, part of their portfolio is Discovery Channel. So it seems to me like they could move the Kona broadcasting over to Discovery from NBC or CBS. And that could be probably a big revenue generator. I don't know. I'm just speculating. I think that with Discovery and a lot of what Ironman is now doing with their Facebook Live type stuff, they might be able to have more avenues to show more championship races. and on time slots. And then I also think that, you know, one of the small, one of the VC firms or the private equity firms that was involved in the transaction was also involved in it when Providence sold it to Competitor Group. I think that's when, and he was involved in that transaction, and he's been a part of Ironman for a while. I don't think, you know, I was here, I've been around for all of the acquisitions since it was from 2007. And I've not seen, honestly, each year I think it gets better. I think that I didn't see much change from when Wanda took it over. In fact, I saw that Ironman was allowed to do a lot more things. They created a lot more programs. I felt that they did offering deferrals and insurance, and it did become slowly more about the athletes and stuff like that. And I like to see that. I like that Advance is a family-run company. It's private. It doesn't, I don't think that they purchased this with the intent. If you're private equity, you purchase something with the intent of selling it within, I don't know, 5 years or so. I don't think that that's here. I think this is a good landing spot, for Ironman, you know, for the next 10, 15 years. I don't think we're going to see this moving, another acquisition or transition again, in our lifetime of us racing. So I think it's a great move, and I'm excited to see what comes out of it for sure.
That's interesting. I didn't realize they owned Discover, I guess. That, and I think back of Discover Channel with the postal team, Tour de France, and maybe they will resurrect some things like that. That'd be pretty cool, actually.
Remember, and they used to have all those Eco Challenge races. Yeah. They used to have all of that type of stuff. Discovery was all about that. And so Discovery is in their portfolio. And so that's where I see, again, and I have not heard one word from what I call Tampa. I mean, this is just pure speculation, but I'm really excited for it personally. So this will be exciting, and looking forward to it. It'll be interesting to see, because everything with Advance is based out of New York City, but everything with Ironman is based out of Tampa. So it'll be interesting if they still leave them in separate offices or how they're going to do it. But I think the current management team and operations team at Ironman, I actually think they do a great job. I get to look under the hood a lot more than the general athletes do. And for as big as they are and as global, and I think they do a fantastic job personally.
Well, it seems like a good place to maybe wrap this up for now. And my goodness, Matt, your history and your knowledge of Ironman is phenomenal.
Thank you.
I guess I didn't realize all of that. I was just kind of enjoying listening today.
Yeah.
So we appreciate.
I like talking.
Yeah, no kidding. I figured we'd get maybe 4 or 5 questions and let you just roll. And it worked out just fine. We learned a lot, I think, and look forward to seeing you hopefully soon and getting on the rides and walking in your door once in a while at base headquarters up there in Boulder, which is always fun. And let's all stay safe, and I look forward to the future.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, guys. Love being on this. I've been wanting to be on this podcast for a long time now.
Oh, awesome. Well, you're welcome back anytime, Matt. It's been a blast.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
All right, Bill, what'd you think of that?
Oh, well, Matt has some wonderful stories, a lot of history with triathlon, Ironman, you know, guiding. He sees it from, I like his perspective, and I've always enjoyed talking with Matt because he does offer quite a broad brush of perspective and knowledge and history. And you know, from a business person who's very tied to Ironman, to a competitor, to being around it for so long, and then a model for the Cologne. I mean, gosh, I don't know who could have a bigger swath of experience with Ironman.
Yeah, I you and I were exchanging a text, I think it was right after the interview, and I was saying he just has this different lens. And it's not that he has a different lens, he has so many lenses that he sees the sport through. That's the thing.
Right.
It's just right. multifaceted, which really makes it, you know, really, really interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say about it. And I got to say, I've said it before, that commercial is hilarious. That's really funny.
Yeah, no, he's I've really gotten to know him a lot better in the last, I don't know, 6 months. And you know what I like about Matt is he swims upstream. He's not afraid to try things just to try them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've seen him already during this COVID with his Zoom podcast and spin classes now. And he just like, this morning, he just threw out, we're going to do a 6 PM spin class. Just jump on Zoom and we'll all just chat while we ride our trainers. I mean, it's nothing's very orchestrated and he'll get 50, 60 people that just jump on and they all talk and ride their bikes.
Yeah. He's just,
it's just that simple.
He's got a community.
Yeah. He's got a strong community.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
I couldn't believe what a difference this, you know, environment is having on the sports nutrition business, at least, you know, his particular business. He talked about, you know, some of the, you know, daily sales and how it's changed. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Really makes your heart goes out to these businesses, and I hope they get some relief quickly.
Yeah, it's interesting. I really find myself not utilizing sports nutrition, even though I've been riding my bike. I don't know if that's, and I've had some decent rides, but you know, I can carry pretty much whatever I need. I just get a bar and some water, and it feels like everything's just simpler. I don't know what it is. And I haven't really gone through my normal, maybe it's the intensity's down. So I just, you know, get by with water. And if I really need something, I'll pop in at a gas station.
That's interesting. It hasn't changed my habits at all.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm still using the same products I would normally use, the same quantity that I would normally use. I haven't changed what I would use to, you know, fuel me through a long ride. I'm still, you know, taking my UCAM with me and, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah. I don't know why. Just.
Well, hey, bud, I've got a question for you. What's new in the 303?
Whew. A lot, I guess.
Talk about Ride the Rockies.
I was just going to say, I think the news just came yesterday that Ride the Rockies canceled. And, you know, it's interesting that some of these events are really, you know, they're all scrambling from what I can gather. We had Lance Panaguti in the Garage Talks yesterday, and we can get to that in a little bit. But, you know, I think all these events are trying to reschedule, if possible, move it to the fall, if everything does open up and people can actually do these events, the fall is going to be super busy. And, you know, all these weekends are getting taken up. And so Ride the Rockies really didn't have a choice to move. So they just canceled it until 2021. And, you know, that's really unfortunate. And, you know, these small towns that host that really, really get excited about it. And it brings a lot of revenue to them. So it's a bummer. And, but what's interesting is if you drill down and look at, you know, people, one of the frequently asked questions was why can't you move it? And the answer was simply what I just said, not a lot of weekends available. It's a lot of logistics to figure out. And in that response, the governor of Colorado, so I haven't seen all this, but apparently there's a order out there that says if you have more than 250 people, no event will happen until Labor Day. And so yesterday, Pete Piccolo came over as well to do a garage talk. And that news had just kind of broken, but there wasn't any real detail about what all that means. And hopefully today that comes out. So by next week, we should be able to tell people more. But it sounds as if that's an executive order, but that locally there will be ways to, I guess, petition to have an event bigger than that as long as X and Y are covered or whatever. You know, if the city of – so take a triathlon, for instance, up at Boulder. If Boulder says, you know what, we're actually okay if you come out here with 500 people, but you have to do this – to prove the safety and maybe it spreads out differently. Maybe, you know, it's all time trial bike starts. Who knows, right? There might be ways that they'll allow that to happen, but the aggregate might be 500 people, but they won't be congregating so tightly, you know. I don't know, but that's what maybe will happen to allow events to actually happen that aren't, you know, ginormous concerts or huge, huge whatever. So, I mean, like Ironman Boulder 70.3, that's going to be a different animal than, say, Lance's Colorado Triathlon, right? Because there's, whatever, 3,000 competitors, and then add in another 3,000 to 5,000 people who go out there to the reservoir to watch it. That's a different story. So they're going to have to really change up what they're doing to make that probably happen. But who knows?
Yeah. Well, yeah, if you just take this for the, you know, black and white text that it is, I mean, there's no events. Really, there's not going to be any racing until after Labor Day. And that's really the season, honestly. That's, you know, except for fall, you know, fall events. But that's the season. And frankly, my friends and I, you know, the discussion that we're having is, don't register for anything until things are officially open, right? Don't speculatively register for anything, because you're likely not going to get that money back.
Well, that's just it. I can't imagine. I know there's been a couple of races that people are trying to push people to open, you know, sign up for, or so, almost like the ski passes. Hey, sign up now, we'll give you a better deal. It's like, really? I mean, I'm not throwing any money at anything until I know it's going to happen. So I really applaud Lance Panaguti yesterday talking about that, where he's like, you know what, I would love to keep your, you know, I'd love some revenue, of course, but I'm not going to encourage anybody to sign up for any of my races until I know they can happen. And, you know, he sold a couple of trailers. He's still committed to paying all his staff throughout the whole summer. And he's not paying himself, but he's trying to do everything possible to keep the doors open. He said this reminds him of when they started in 2007, where it was just bootstraps and you do whatever you have to do to keep the business going. And, you know, I think anybody that's encouraging you to sign up for anything is really doing you a disservice right now. You know how it is. Every day there's a new something.
Yep.
So until I know I can wake up in the morning and actually go do something, I'm not going to get super excited about it.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yep. So we'll let's see if we can pull out some more information and maybe shed some more light on it. It'd be great to get somebody from the, you know, like state government to talk about it.
Right.
Hey, I also saw, speaking of other things in the 303, I saw your interview with Sean Farrell of Bicycle Racing Association of Colorado. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. You know, he's he's a little bit of a – he's a little bit shy, I guess would be maybe the right word. He's just kind of a, you know, introvert a little bit. And he but he got pretty excited when he started talking about some of his days of officiating – some of the UCI races around the world. He's officiated in 44 countries.
Yeah.
I mean, and he talked about, I don't know if he's kind of a Star Trek geek or, you know, that kind of thing, but he mentioned how, because I said, I forget the exact question, but he said how exciting it was to be flying down the road in one of the support vehicles, head official, you know, three walkie talkies, head sticking out of the sunroof, some 18-year-old Italian guy just bombing down the hill in a super fast car, and he's trying to coordinate and keep people safe and move people out of the way and talking on the phone or the walkie talkies. And he said it was like the closest thing he could imagine being in the captain's chair of the Enterprise.
Well, I don't know about being in the head official's car, but I could tell you what it's like being in one of the team cars, because we did that a couple years ago. That was insane, bombing down High Grade Deer Creek Canyon. I mean, both, you know, lanes were closed both directions, right? So they had the entire road, and we were going 50, 60 miles an hour in a car down that, and we could not keep up with the cyclists, the peloton.
I mean, we ride that road, and I'm not much of a daredevil, so I'm kind of a wuss when it comes to going down hills, but I can't imagine going that fast knowing, I mean, there's potholes in that road. There's like, you know, doesn't that road have the center, like where they groove out the center. So if you cross,
there are a couple of turns where they've got the little, what do they call them?
I forget. Little, but you, and those really rattle you. Can't imagine cycling down that at 60 miles an hour. And, you know, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, Sean was great. He had, you know, had some good stories. I think Brack is, Brack's struggling right now, like everybody, of course, and they're pretty dependent on races for their revenue. And they have overhead just like any other organization. And Sean, you know, works for them. And so without races, there's not much for them to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're trying to reinvent themselves a little bit, find a new path, if you will. And I think they've been trying to do this anyways for a long time because, you know, yeah, they keep track of things and they help races, you know, they help set up the races, they officiate the races, they do all those things. But if the races are going away, obviously that really puts them in a bind. But I think they're trying to figure out ways to help somewhat organize the whole cycling community. One of the things we talked about, and we talked about it yesterday too, is the gravel rides. And so gravel is kind of this interesting, I don't know, segue, this interesting transition for cyclists. It's a, people have come into gravel from the mountain bike side. People come into gravel from the road bike side. And it's kind of this melting pot now of cycling. So if you speak to a gravel cyclist, you're all of a sudden not sure who you're speaking to. So maybe it's actually going to help bring all the cycling community a little bit closer, because you're not really a roadie, you're not really a mountain bike, and sometimes you're both, and sometimes you're all three.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things Sean mentioned, and so did Pete yesterday, that we're trying to, you know, you want to harness some of that energy that's now being, is prevalent in gravel. You know, and one thing, if you think about mountain biking versus road biking, you know, most of the routes people know pretty well, right? I mean, there's no shortage of ways to figure out where to go mountain bike. There's trails, trail websites and things like that, or you can... On road bikes, there's plenty of bike maps and this and that. But you know what there's not? There's not really any good guides to gravel riding.
Oh, that's true. That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So like Pete was saying yesterday, he had a friend that rode from, I think, Golden all the way to Marble, Colorado, which is near Aspen, and only spent like 5% of the time on pavement. I was like, how do you do that? That's interesting. I have no idea how I did that, actually. It's a very interesting. And so I know myself, the other day, I was on Boulder, and I brought my gravel bike. So I parked at the reservoir, and I went down Monarch Road, and then I crossed, what would it be, Neva. And I ended up on 47th, which is dirt. And I went to Oxford, and then over to 41st, all on dirt. Around Table Mountain, and then back around, and I was all on dirt, and I went by the most beautiful farms I've ever seen. Oh my gosh, it was so cool, and it was so quiet, and it was just, yeah, super relaxing. And I know there's a lot more roads out that way that I didn't go. I just didn't have a lot of time, and it was getting late, so I just ended up riding 20 miles, but 18 of it was on dirt, and I had never even been on these roads. I just kind of was following dirt. That was a blast.
Yeah, I'm. That's interesting. I'm just browsing through Strava here to see, you know, just can you search for gravel routes, and you get a lot of hits on gravel, but I don't see anything just about, you know, gravel routes.
I'm sure it's out there. I just think it's not as prevalent.
No.
So.
Yeah, for sure.
And I know there's a lot of county roads and things like that that most people wouldn't know of because you just never thought about doing it. So. There's our mission, maybe. That's maybe a thing to do in the COVID world right now.
Well, yeah, there are a couple of things that I learned in that interview. You know, I just with Sean. The other thing is I didn't realize how key these state associations are, and almost all states have them.
Yeah.
I can't remember exactly how many he said.
It was like 36 or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, interesting. They have a key role. Which is really about just keeping the records, you know, the racing records, the result records.
Yeah, I don't know the history that well. I know that I think some of it was just, it's almost like USA Triathlon where they had regions. And then, and I think it's a very, you know, USA Cycling had regions, and then they went back. You know, I think there was a lot of contraction and expansion and contraction and expansion, and I think some of the, you know, resulting was some of these local organizations. I mean, somebody has to keep track, right? And then feed USA Cycling who's doing what, so that when they have their national championships, you have a legitimate way that people qualified.
You said you've done a couple of other garage talks this week, which obviously haven't, they aren't here in my show notes, but who else have you talked to?
Well, that was just yesterday. So I had Lance Panaguti come back. And that was a sobering interview. It was sort of an emergency garage talk. We kind of joked, is this the penalty box or is this the garage talk? But he announced officially that the Carlisle Triathlon is now canceled, not postponed. It was this first week of June. And he just had to make that decision based on, well, so Boulder said no events for sure until June 15th at the very earliest. You know, and that's tough for them because he was talking yesterday about how, I forget her name now, but she kind of runs Boulder Reservoir, and they've had to let go a bunch of staff, and they're down to two people, and their revenues obviously come from events as well as obviously daily entry fees, you know, probably permits for fishing and things like that. But they do rely on events, and they're really hurting. Like, they don't know what they're going to do out there. And they're kind of quasi government, but they're also, you know, her job is tied to the revenue of that facility. So if that facility doesn't open, she might be out of job, even though she's technically a government employee. So maybe they find a new place for her somewhere else. But that's the kind of reality that's hitting all these agencies, is when they are pay to play agency and there's no play. Well, what are they going to do? You know, so they want these events back for sure. So it's not that anybody's trying to be a hard ass. They want them back. It's going to be difficult. So we talked about that. We had Pete Piccolo of the executive director of Bicycle Colorado. And we talked about their role during this crisis, of how they work really closely with all these local agencies. For instance, when the stay-at-home orders hit and essential businesses were listed, Governor Polis did not list bike shops in the first round of that listing. And so Bicycle Colorado, you know, really fought hard in the late hours of the night, and by morning he had put them in the list. But that doesn't mean that locally cities would allow it to open. So for instance, Aspen didn't have bike shops on the essential list. So then Pete and his staff had to talk with the people at Aspen, and there was a few other communities like that as well. So he's been super busy, you know, fighting for making sure the biking industry gets its fair shake. And you know, and it's a, you know, we talked about how a bike is a commuting tool, is necessary for a lot of people. It's not just, you know, trying to be selfish with bike sales. And a lot of people are riding bikes, so they need a place to bring their bikes to get fixed, and that's obviously what's been mostly happening. But and we talked about the structure of the organization and other things that they do. And one of the questions, this is kind of fun, so this was actually Lance's idea, but he thinks that we should ask these questions of every garage talk. And we have our two truths and a lie. So Lance's was, what's your best decision of 2020? What's your favorite place in the world? And what would be your job if you aren't doing what you're doing now? And so I asked Pete, I forgot to ask him about the job, but I did ask him about his favorite place. And he said the Amalfi Coast in Italy. And then, his best decision of 2020 was to start doing yoga. Ah. And he said it's really helped his riding. Pete, I don't know how old Pete is. I'm guessing he's in his 50s. And he said it's made a huge difference in his riding. And he's a really good cyclist, and he's really felt a difference. So it's been interesting.
Strength training too. Flexibility, yeah, and strength. Two things that should be in your training.
And that's kind of what yoga does for you naturally. Do you do yoga?
I do.
Do you?
I do. Yeah. Do yoga.
I so want to like night. Yoga.
A little bit. It's just per my night routine.
Really? That's interesting. I so want to like it, but I just struggle.
Well, Yeah. Well, I'm just not very flexible, so I've got to do it.
Oh, I'm terribly inflexible, but I still, yeah.
Yep. Well, outside of Colorado, I picked up this news. I still long for watching races and these Ironman VR races, these VR pro challenges. I at least tune in for them to, you know, kind of see what's going on. Jesper Svensson from Sweden was victorious in the VR3 Pro Challenge. This is a 2-lap 20K virtual bike course. Svensson completed the 2 laps of the sprint distance simulation in a time of 53:29, including today's fastest lap of 26, the day's fastest lap of 26:34 to take the win. Jesper Svensson, first place with total time of 53:29. Kyle Buckingham, 55:18. Cody Beals, 55:54. And Igor Amorelli of Brazil with a 56:06. Bill, I know they're trying to make this exciting. I got to tell you, I'm just not really getting into the VR racing.
I will. Have you seen the one that USA Cycling's doing?
No. It's good?
Pretty good. Yeah, it's okay. Actually really good. I found it the other day. I shared one of them just on 303 Facebook, I think Tuesday or Wednesday, but I happened to catch it. But so Dave Towell, the announcer. So he and I forget the other guy, they're announcing these races that are on.
Dave Towell could make a yogurt, right? Going downhill with chopsticks race. Yeah. Fast, funny, right?
Yeah, no, he's great, but I will tell you. So I was watching this race, and it's of course Zwift, and they have all these pro cyclists racing against each other. But what was really cool, and yeah, Dave does a good job, and his co-host, I can't remember, but they did a really nice job of letting you know what was going on. But what was fun is you saw these pro cyclists racing on Zwift. They all had their it was watts per kilo, right, and you could see exactly what these guys were putting out on watts. And you had mountain bike racers racing against pro road racers. And so you had this intermixing of different kinds of people, but they were all racing together, all based on watts per kilo. And some of these guys were cranking up some hills at about 8 watts per kilo.
Oh, God.
I know, right? But it was so kind of – it was neat to watch it because – I'm not a NASCAR guy, but I know that's been one of the things that got them super popular on TV was they really became transparent with the cameras in the car and all the data and the this and that. And so watching this on Zwift kind of gave you that same feeling. Like it was kind of neat to see what this rider was doing. And then when they made a move, you see their watts per kilo go up and Dave would make a cool comment. And it was actually okay. I mean, I wouldn't sit there all day and watch it, but it was kind of fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't replace the real thing for me, but
No.
But we don't have that option quite yet. So,
I'd love to see the viewership of the NFL draft last night. It was on. I mean, the NFL draft's become a pretty big thing anyway, but usually it's like on ESPN, and you know, and it was on regular. I think it was CBS, flat out prime time all night long. And my daughter Riley, she likes football, but I didn't know how much she likes football, but she sat and watched it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because it was the first round. So, of course, those are the marquee names in college football. But they have interviews and highlights. And so it had, a lot to go around it. It wasn't just people saying, I'm going to pick this guy. But it was pretty good. And I think it made me realize how much I do enjoy some sports. I don't miss it as much as I thought I might, but it was fun to have something.
Well, yeah, if gatherings of 250 plus are going to be not allowed until, I mean, how are they going to do that? I mean, just like, I guess they could have no fans in the stadium for games.
I think, yeah.
It just dawned on me. I'm like,
it's going to come down to testing. I think if they find a way to zap your forehead to make sure you're not carrying it, they're going to let you in the facility. But I wouldn't be shocked if they – I've heard things like, well, they'll only let people sit on every other seat, or if you're with family, you know, I don't know. I was thinking about it because last night the draft was supposed to be in Las Vegas, and you know, they have that new stadium for the Las Vegas Raiders now, and they put, you know, however many hundreds of millions of dollars into that stadium, and now are those all obsolete for a while? You know, it's like, wow, all these facilities, the new one in Los Angeles, which is a huge facility for the Los Angeles Rams and the Chargers, and all that infrastructure is now maybe moot for a little while.
Yeah, right.
Interesting.
Yep. Well, we are going to wrap up the show with the video of the week. This is Matt Miller in the Iron Man cologne commercial, Avon Iron Man Glory. This is too much. In fact, I think we're just going to have to do a separate post on this just to make sure that people don't miss this. it's really that awesome. I'm playing it in my headphones right now. I shouldn't be doing that. I'm getting distracted. You know, the other thing before we wrap up here that I saw this week that I'm on the page right now is these Boco Gear face masks. I think I'm going to pick up a couple of these. These are awesome.
Yeah, Primal.
Yeah.
Has one out too, but they're having trouble getting them now. But
are they really?
Oh. A little bit, just because people love them. So yeah, Boco's got it. I don't know when they're going to be available exactly. I did get an email from Kay. They're working through it.
But they're on their website right now.
Are we going to place an order?
I'm going to see if I can get one in my cart right now. There's a Colorado one I kind of like here.
It's cool. Boco, I mean, people are doing what they got to do to keep the doors open, right?
Add 5 masks, get 1 free. Yeah, you can. This is ready to go right now.
What's retail on those?
$11.99.
Okay.
$12.
$303 one.
Yeah, right. Yes, we should get. Oh, we should get some 303 ones. That's a great idea. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I have an email. I okay an email. Maybe I'll make that comment. What we can do.
Okay. Hey, we've got some upcoming interviews as well. We've got Kyle Pittman. He's a veteran and a Marine. He's a family man. He's going to the Paralympics as a time trial cyclist. You can hear all about that from Kyle. We've got Debbie Potts from the Whole Athlete Podcast to talk about what is trending with staying home and staying healthy. And we've got pro triathlete Colin Lockery is going to join us. So I got inspired by your interview, your garage talk with him. And I said, listen, we got to get him on the show. Send him a text message and he's going to join us. We're going to have this great kind of, you know, getting real with Colin Lockery interview.
Oh, nice. That'll be fun. He's a fun guy.
He's a great guy. We had a nice little chat last night.
Yep.
Folks, please support the sponsors that support our show. We really think these products are awesome. Check them out at milehighendurancepodcast.com/sponsors. Be sure to follow us on social media at 303 Endurance and at 303 Mile High Endurance and at Mile High Endurance Podcast. Stay tuned, train informed, and enjoy the endurance journey.
With your Mile High Endurance Podcast. Ooh, yeah. My name is Puncher Man. Woo! Hello, everybody. And thank you for the gift.